Okay, well, we're going to do questions and answers, and I will try and get through as many of these questions as I can today, or if not, we'll have to finish them off tomorrow. I'll start with some easy ones. If we want to find out on our scroll, what's written on our scroll, what do you recommend? Well, first thing I would recommend is don't try and find out what's on your scroll. Because as soon as you try and find out what's on your scroll, then you're going to try and figure out how you can do it. And if you actually found out all the things on your scroll, some of you will be so overwhelmed by what you saw, you'd give up. Because you'd think it was impossible. So the best way of dealing with the scroll of your destiny, God's plan and purpose for your life in relationship to Him, is work it out every day. If you go to Him in relationship every day, engage Him in first love, surrender to your destiny every day, frame your life to fulfill your destiny every day, then you'll be led by your heart engaged to His heart. So the more you know His heart, the more you're going to outwork your scroll. Now, if He's got anything He wants to tell you specifically for that day, He will. Most of the time, you'll just find that you will be led by your heart, which is stirred from your destiny scroll. So you're only responsible for today. Jesus said, look, today's got enough in it to occupy you for today. Don't start thinking about tomorrow or yesterday, because then you will not have enough time for today. So we have fresh mercies every day. Those fresh mercies enable us to fulfill everything we're called to do today. And if you do that, then your scroll will be worked out one day at a time. And you'll find out you fulfill it without trying to fulfill it in your own way. Now, there is a sense where also by engaging in the yesod of God and connecting with what you were doing in the past and things like that, that your spirit can be activated by your scroll, but that is not necessarily a cognitive thing that you have to know. Now, I used to go to the ark of God's presence every day and I would engage with the four faces and it would be like, okay, what's my mandate for today? What am I authorized to do? And I was asking for that because I wasn't actually as intimate with God as I thought. Because if I was coming from an intimate position with God, I wouldn't need to ask. Because it would be His heart's desires and my heart's desires, because we're heart to heart, would be simultaneously agreement. And then I'd just flow. So I used to ask, and He would give me some specific mandates. And then as I got more intimate with Him in the love of His love and everything like that, then basically he said, look, why are you asking all this information all the time? Why do you need to know? So in separating my soul and spirit, the need to know ended. I didn't need to know because I trusted Him. So then the relationship began to then flow rather than me trying to work it out. So it's like, Jesus didn't ask for a list of instructions every day. He knew the Father's heart because He was connected with, and the Father was working through Him, in Him, in the same way as He is in us. So we can just relax. There is a scroll. Some of the things on that scroll you already know because your hearts are already joined towards it. And so you're already connected with some scroll issues because you know your heart's there. Some things on your scroll are identified because there's opposition to it. And they're the things you have to subdue and overcome to fulfill things. Because the enemy is trying to stop you fulfilling your scroll. So each day, as you subdue and overcome and rule, you'll find that you begin to outwork your destiny day at a time, relationally. So that was an easy one. You said, activate the eyes of your heart. Please explain how this is done. The eyes of your heart, Paul described in Ephesians chapter 1, where he basically talked about opening the eyes of your heart so that you will know what your calling is, so you will know how things are being at work. So really, the eyes of your heart are your imagination. It's what your heart is able to begin to picture and see on that screen. That screen God projects things on, so He can show you things visually. You can use that screen to create a doorway to engage, so you activate it by beginning to think about what you're focused on, let that form a picture in your mind, whether it be a visual thing, a sensory thing, a perception, an intuition, whatever it is, but you will just begin to sense and perceive something that God is wanting to engage you with. And particularly if you use it, see, God can use it and you, it's your imagination. He can use it because he's given it to you, but you can use it. You create a doorway using your imagination, the eyes of your heart, so you will know by stepping through the door. But when you step through, then you're just in the experience. You're not then using your imagination. You are having an experience. And there's a difference. It still may be played out on the screen within your mind, but you are not in charge of it. Where you are in charge of it, when you're thinking to open up a door. So you open and activate it, but he also activates it at times. And so when you have an involuntary encounter, he is actually determining what's going on the screen because he's taking you through an experience. But you can also choose to engage that way. It is practice. You know, Hebrews 5:14 says, you know, train your senses by practice. So the more you actually practice meditating visually, the easier you will find it is to see things visually. If you are a sensor, the more you practice sensing, the more easy that you will sense. You know, and you can learn to see, but well, I would like to see, so actually just practice seeing. But some people are seers, they find it really easy to see. But actually most seers that I've engaged with don't really know what they're seeing most of the time. They're just having an encounter, a vision, and they want someone to interpret it for them. Because they've not developed the knowing and the hearing. So they see amazing things, but they're sort of like, wow, I had this amazing encounter. I said, oh yeah, what was it? Oh yes, so well, what did it mean? Oh, I don't know. I was hoping you would tell me. So now I'm going to tell you, go back to God and ask God. Because he's the one who gave it you. Let him develop it by learning to hear his voice. So that's really what the eyes of your heart are all about. And it does take some time, just like in the natural sense, to learn something, it does in the spirit. You know, things may happen to you, but for you to actually function in it, that does take time to develop. And it did take me years, but people are not having to take years today because now it's an actively open. You know, I sort of had to learn because I didn't know I was learning. You know, I look back and now I see what God did, but I didn't know. I was just going through these things that God said to me and did to me over this period of time. I only now can look back and picture it, put it all together and see the process. You know, so now I put it together. So yeah, he was teaching me to hear his voice and then teaching me to be able to converse. And then he was teaching me to see and see it visually, and then he opened up that realm to go beyond the sort of normal things I was seeing, which were the Bible things, you know. So that was really that. There's two things here. How can you explain the role of each of the angels? And then there's another one. Please elaborate on the four angels in the corners. Did you invite them, or were they assigned? Please give examples of their assignments and functions. Well, I did interact with them before I came, and I left them here last time, you know, so they've been here with whoever wanted to engage with them since last year. But I did touch base with them to make sure that they wanted to turn up, you know. So, but did I assign them? Yes, in a sense, because I talked to them and asked for their presence and they're activating here. And with angels, you can do that. You know, some people, oh, you can't tell angels what to do. Well, why not? They're ministering spirits on our behalf, so why wouldn't we tell them what to do? Now, you don't do it disrespectfully, but I assign angels all the time to things. Go ahead of me, prepare the way, make sure the traffic's all okay, keep me safe, you know, go and find me a parking spot, all sorts of stuff. Well, why would I want to be wasting my time looking for a parking spot when I can get an angel standing in there stopping anyone going in? Well, why not? You know, it's very practical. It's not all supery spiritual stuff. It's like, well, this has helped me, spirit helps me in my day. You know, so I talk to my angels in that way. And we have a whole canopy of angels over us when we're seated on our thrones, which are 10 layers deep with myriads upon myriads and hundreds of thousands upon thousands within each one. So there's like 10 different layers of different angels. So you can go and engage those canopies and you can find out what they do. And then when you assign them, you assign the right ones. You know, I wouldn't be assigning the Kashmirin angels to do a burning ones seraphim angels job because they wouldn't do it. They couldn't do it because they have a different function. So angels have different functions. These four angels have specific functions in the process of our transitioning out of an old mindset into a new mindset and coming into our sonship and our inheritance. And that's what they're here to do, help us. So transformation is about what it sounds like, being transformed, changing from one degree of glory to another, having our minds renewed, not being conformed to the world, but being conformed to the image that we were created in. And sometimes that angel will help us by engaging it to show us areas that need dealing with. You need to be transformed in this area of your thinking. You need this emotional area dealing with. Sometimes I see them having different implements. Normally they have a heralding trumpet that they're issuing a sound, releasing a frequency, but sometimes transformation, I've seen it with an axe, and an axe to sever things and untether you from particular things. And if you see them and you engage with them, then you cooperate with what they're doing. You know, because when I saw the axe, I was like, oh, what are you doing? And he said, well, some people are tethered with such a long chain that they've never had it yanked. So they've never got to the end of the chain. So they think they're free. But when they get to the point where God calls them to go beyond, they will get to a point and they'll be pulled back. So I'm here to sever those chains to make sure people are free. So I thought, oh, great. I'll go. I want to make sure I'm free, so sever any chains. Well, I ended up in a place that I'd never been before because I was free. So people respond to that in different ways. Winds of change. Now, the winds of change, you know, in the order, I've also engaged the wind of change to help with weather, with, you know, situations where I needed winds and change. But generally, it's to do with the change of season in our lives, or bringing us into a new season, bringing us into a change and transformation, that those winds of change blow. And you want them to blow things. Now, sometimes they'll bring you into a cold wind from the north season. You know, and that's the season I went in the dark cloud. It was like, I've been having a beautiful, warm wind for 2 years, and all of a sudden it's just like, whoa, what is this? Because that was the season that needed to actually deal with something in my life. So that wind of change blew that season so that I could go through that process. So we all have seasons of our life that do different things. And being sensitive to those seasons is really important, because if heaven operates on four seasons: judgment, justice, grace, and mercy, and a period of rest. So those are the four things that heaven functions around. And all the chancellor's houses and all the other stuff, they all function within that sort of thing. So there are seasons where, if we're in a season of justice globally, because that's the season we're in globally, a season of justice, where God's judgment is being outworked in justice, which brings change and transformation. It's not a bad thing. Judgment is never bad. It's always good. It's a judgment that God makes. And even if that judgment that says, you're not in alignment with things, that's a good thing, because now I know I can get aligned. Because there's no punishment associated with judgment. And that's the problem that we have from an old church perspective. They saw God's judgment always as negative. God is going to judge Canada. He's going to judge America because of the government doing this and government. He isn't. There are natural consequences that come if we align ourselves with outside of God's purposes as nations. And there are things that gives the enemy legal rights to do in our nation. It isn't God who's doing them. Because all judgment is based on the cross. And on the cross, everyone was found innocent, because all sin was dealt with. Therefore, there is no punishment to be dished out by God. But there are consequences of us walking independently. Like the children of Israel, when they came out in the promised land, and then all these judgments came because of the judges and all that period. Why? Because they kept going after foreign gods, and they ended up in captivity. And then they would come back, oh God, God, rescue us. And then God would send a judge like Gideon, and he would raise them up, and then they would be back. And then they'd be okay for a period, and then, well, they would go off and do their own thing again. And then they walk outside of God's covenant protection, because they're walking in their own path, and they're subject to whatever happens as a result of walking outside of God's judgment. God removes his hand of protection. He doesn't punish anybody. The way the Old Testament is written in a very Hebrew idiomatic way that always attributes everything to God. And actually, they're not God. So when it says, God did this and he destroyed these people, you'll often find hidden in there, God removed his hand. And we take it, oh, God did the destroying because he's going to destroy people. He didn't. But he removed his protection because they chose to do their own thing. So if you walk outside of the protection of God, that's your problem. Now, he will still try and bring good out of this whole situation because he's still waiting for people to come and ask him. And every time he asked the children of Israel, they responded, and then he did something. Eventually, he divorced them because it was like, okay, enough's enough. You know, so there was a whole process that went on there, but we need to understand that the winds of change, when it blows us into seasons that God has as aligned for our life, which we need. And if we cooperate, we'll find those seasons can be quicker than if we resist. Now, I often resisted because I didn't know it was God. You know, when I learned to ask and find out, then I found I cooperated a lot easier. So now when something seems to be on a change and I'm sensitive to change, so like recently, you know, I've been feeling unsettled because God told me some stuff and I was like, oh, do I really, and I'm not sure I want to do that, you know, but I said, okay, you said in 2 years there's a shift coming, so you need to get ready. So, okay, well, what is that shift? Well, I'm not telling you, you know, do you trust me? Well, it depends. This is where you think, well, depends what it is, you know. But in the end, okay, all right. So I start looking at, okay, this season. But then I start to feel, well, and I look at things and I think, well, this isn't right. You know, well, this isn't what God really wants. Before, I couldn't even see that. So that starts to actually prepare me for this change because I start to see things that I'm no longer happy with. And I'm no longer thinking, whereas before it was like, well, this is fine. Now this isn't. Now I've got a choice. Am I going to then do something about that or not? So there's a lot of seasons that we have to cooperate with. Sound of many waters, that angel is very much associated with the voice of God, speaking a frequency that will begin to activate our sonship and activate our inheritance and activate our identity as a son. So calling forth our destiny. You know, not by necessarily telling you what it is, but stirring you to pursue it. Because the voice begins to resonate and you begin to vibrate with it and you come into alignment with it. So it's really calling you forth. It's speaking over you. Words of affirmation, words of encouragement, words of challenge, words of approval in all sorts of different ways. But the voice of God, you know, like the sound of, and I always associated with waterfalls because, you know, the deep calling to deep. So this is God's voice calling deeply to your spirit to respond and come into agreement about yourself. It's all about you as a son. That's what it's about. And refiner's fire is a seraphim angel. And if you know there are things for the transformation has showed you that you're dealing with, you go and engage that and lay down on the altar and allow the fire to consume everything which is a hindrance or an obstacle. Because fire is to purify and refine. Again, fire does not punish. Fire changes. Fire does not destroy. Fire changes from one thing to another. So when we embrace the seraphim, it's like the burning coals from the altar being placed on that area in our lives. And then afterwards, what was the response? Here am I, send me. So now I'm free in this area, so I'm freer to respond and engage. You know, so those are sort of the gist of it. But when you engage, be open for whatever they want to impart. Sometimes you just sense something. You know, when I engage the seraphim angel, I often feel heat. Just sense heat. You know, but it can be different for everyone, you know, depending on what you need to deal with and how you find it easier to respond. You know, but it's engaged by faith. You know, it's like, okay, well, I can't really see them. Okay, well, do you believe they're there? Well, I've got a choice. I'm going to believe they're there if I see them, or I'm going to believe they're there even if I don't see them. And if I respond in faith, then I just go and sit and engage. And I just allow whatever they want to communicate to communicate. And how do they communicate? Mostly by thoughts in your mind, generally, or memories, or things that they stir. And you may have a sense of something or a feeling of something. But that's really how that sort of works. Okay. How do you contract time? How is time subject to you doing more in the same amount of time? Well, when I wasn't able to do this until I was living in dual realms. Because while I was going into heaven and coming back out of heaven, as soon as I'm back out of heaven, I'm not ruling from heaven where time is subject. Because time isn't subject to me here. I have to be there in that realm, which operates in a different time frame, to be able to administrate that here. And people call it rich time or all sorts of different descriptions of where you can do more in a period than is actually naturally possible. And for some, they would see it's expanding time. So my half an hour is 5 hours, and some with people, well, I'm contracting time, my 5 hours is contracted into half an hour, and I can do in half an hour what I would do. And they're both really the same sort of thing. It's essentially, you are not subject to time, time is subject to you. If you accept the passage of time, you'll get old and you'll die. Because you have put yourself under the passage of time. So, oh, there's another year. There's another day. The sun has revolved around another. There's another day. So, oh, it's another day older. So you can think that way, and that will actually affect how you actually live. Or you can say all those things, the sun and the moon and the stars and all those things, were designed as symbols of government. So they are designed to align. So that we are effectively aligning things. You know, I started to hear people talk about the Maseroth and the stars and the circle of the deep and the houses of heaven and the 12 zodiac signs, and the Hebrew was called the Maseroth and whatever. And I listened to some people. Oh, I did my head in. It was just like, you know, I started listening and people said, oh, this is great. They're talking about the 12 houses of heaven. I'm like, okay. So I listened and I'm like, after 10 minutes, I was like, you're giving me a headache, you know? And they were like, they were talking about, well, you know, it's going to take another 2,000 years for the area of Aquarius to end, and then we'll come into them. I'm like, no, it isn't. I'm not being subject. That is century astrology. I'm subject to the house that I was born under. No, they're subject to me. So I look to engaging the stars and the sun and the moon for an effectively understanding government. So I rule time. Time does not rule me. Well, how do you do that? Well, you have to know your identity and your authority, and you need to be positioned in heaven, otherwise you can't do it. Because if you're operating on earth without being above the earth in the realms of heaven, you're subject to what's going on the earth, which is why living in dual realms is so important, because we're doing things continually flowing from there to here. Therefore, we're administrating time there for us to be able to outwork that here. So I have an expectation that I will be able to do everything I need to do. So I live from that complete expectation. I know that that is what I can live according to. If I'm hoping, then I don't know. So you sometimes God will do time miracles, and he will translate you, or he'll do something. And you can, you know, call out on him, I'm late, can you get me there? And sometimes he will. But actually, it'll come to a point where it'll basically say, start ruling your own time effectively, because the reason you're always late, because you're getting up too late, or you're not organized. We have to be governing our life, not sort of tossed around by every wind and things that are going on and everything that's happening. So we need to respond rather than react to situations, because we need to rule them. So I live a disciplined kind of life. But within that, I have time to do everything I want to do. I have time for the garden. I have time to watch football, movies. I have time to enjoy life. I have time to enjoy my life and do everything else. Because God has given us this life to enjoy. It's not supposed to be a drudgery, you know, of hard work and duty. It's supposed to be enjoyable, full of joy and full of peace and full of life. Well, that's a mindset. And the way you frame things according to what you believe will determine how you live. And if you always see something as too busy, then you'll live in a too busy state. I never see any busyness whatsoever, because I always have time to do everything. And if there are things that I want to do that I don't appear to have time in my diary to do, that's when I will rule that I can actually contract that time or expand that time. Because I will look and think, I need more time than I have physically available. Because I know how long it takes me to do certain things, and God keeps adding more things into my diary without taking anything away. So I have to be able to. Now, I could say to God, no, I'm sorry, I'm too busy. This isn't fair. You're asking me to do too much. Or I can say, okay, God, if this is part of my destiny and I'm resonating with what you're saying here, actually, no, I have all the time I need to do this, and I will be able to do this effectively and efficiently because I'm ruling this and I'm not being subject to, I haven't got enough time, because I've always got enough time. If you don't think you've got enough time, guess what? You haven't got enough time. Because your thinking determines what your reality is. My reality is I've got the time to do everything. You know, so sometimes you have to discern when to interrupt the natural process of something and when not to. Because it isn't just a whim. You've got to be sensitive to things. So, you know, there have been occasions where I've needed to change flights and speed things up and get to places on time. So I've ruled that and I've established it. Now, I was sitting on the runway in Bristol, and I was going to South Africa in Cape Town, and I was flying from Amsterdam. So I sat on the runway. I had an hour stopover, which was just enough time to get there. So I'm sat on the thing, and the guy comes over, the pilot thing. Oh, air traffic control have informed us that there's a big holdup in Amsterdam. We've got a 20-minute delay in taking off because we've not got a time slot. And actually, there's going to be another 20 to 40-minute delay over Amsterdam to get a landing slot. So, no, there isn't. Because I need to be there because I need to catch a flight. So I declared, no, this plane will take off on time and get there on time. Well, within a minute, the guy came over and said, air traffic control have told us we can take off now and we'll have a slot in Amsterdam. Now, if you are motivated by fear and panic, it doesn't work. You've got to be at a place of peace and rest. I'm not coming out of, oh no, I'll miss my flight. Oh no, I better do this. It's like, no, that's not the reality I'm going to live according to. I'm coming from a place of peace and rest here. So no, this is subject to me. Now, you do have to know your identity to be able to carry that sense of authority. But all of us can. And all of us can do it. You know, it's just a matter of growing in relationship with God so that you know. You know, and from that, you can then look at your whole life and what you can do in a totally different manner. You know, because God won't ask you to do something that you can't do. But you may have to rule and govern to be able to do it. Because he's training us as sons. How does he do things? You know, is he ever panicked? Is he ever in a rush? You know, we might think he doesn't turn up until the last minute sometimes, but that's just somewhat just to test whether we're going to trust him or not. You know, but he never is, because he's always living from the now perspective. So if we're living from the heart of God, then we find we can frame things from a now perspective in the same way that he does. And that requires us to live from that place, which means that you have to occupy that place. I used to go to that place and then go to another place and then rule. And I would go to multiple places as a linear process, but then I got set free from linearity. Therefore, now I can be in multiple places at the same time. So I'm always in his heart. I'm always standing in the four faces of God. I'm always on a throne. I'm always, you know, in a court somewhere doing something and doing anything else. And then I'm still available if there's anything else I might like to do or be on an adventure to do. So again, that's just a mindset of I am not restricted by time and space because I'm in him and he's omnipresent. So why can't I be omnipresent in him? Well, I can. You know, now I don't want to be omnipresent everywhere. I just want to be in the places that I need to be. You know, and that actually means that what I was doing linearly was I would go and present myself as a living sacrifice, I'd engage the ark, and I would do these things. And then I would go and rule, and I would be on my mountain, and I would ruling from there. So I was only having the flow from one place flowing into the earth, which was good. But then when you're in multiple places, you have multiple flows, so you have a greater capacity for everything. So that increased my capacity to control things in the right way and rule, because I'm now flowing like a river rather than one or two little streams now and again. You know? So it does require operating in both realms to be able to do it effectively, I would say. Do you need to have your gates healed before sitting on a bench or legislating? It helps to have a pure heart and to have a flow. But we're all in the process. So God is really looking at the motives of our heart in wanting to be part of a bench or legislate rather than how holy we are, in a sense, from our perspective. Because he sees us as righteous anyway, of course. You know, we're made righteous in Christ. So he never sees us anything other than perfectly righteous. But we may actually have things in our lives which hinder the flow, and therefore they make it harder for us to actually function. I do believe the level of authority that you have in the heavens is proportional to the level of purity of your heart. So it does help to cooperate in transformation. But you don't have to be perfect for him to use you. You have to be willing. So if you're willing, he'll use you to the level that you're capable of ruling. And you may be on a throne, but you may not have the authority to change Arakan, because that might not be the level you're operating in. But then later on, you may. You know, because it does, you mature and you grow in increasing levels of authority. So no, you don't have to be perfect, because none of us will be doing anything. So, but we do have to be willing, and he knows our heart, because that's what he's looking at. You know, what is the desires of my heart? And if the desires of my heart is to glorify and honor him in a situation, yeah, he'll use me. You know, but when you get on a bench, that bench will guarantee bring things to the surface in your relationship with the other two people on the bench, because that's what it's designed to do. It's a relational thing that requires openness, honesty, transparency, and the willingness to work through the issues of trust with one another as you go through the process. And that will bring things up, which then you can deal with, and then you become more open and more honest, more transparent, and that works through. Being a bench, I wouldn't want to be on a bench if I was not willing to go through the process that that bench creates. Because I've been on a number of benches. And I'm on a number of benches, and I know that you need to trust one another, and you don't trust one another without working through the issues that come up. You know, the first bench that I was on was a disaster, you know, because the two other people in the bench just wanted me to do everything. And I'm like, well, we're here together. I want to do this together. Oh, yeah, but you do it better than us. It's just like, yeah, but that's not the point. I want to see what you're doing and engaging and how you're seeing this. Because I need your perspective on this, because you're going to see something different from me. And they're like, you know, so like one of them was my wife. And it was just like, oh, it was a year of misery. Because it's like, I'm just frustrated with, come on, I'm giving you permission to do this. You can do this. You can hear. And it's just like, yeah, but you do it better. It's just like, well, I'm not doing it. So you either do it or it isn't going to get done, because I'm not going to do it. So in the end, it was just like, okay, God, mercy, have mercy on me, because I just can't cope with this any longer. So I was with some friends on another bench, and it was at the beginning of the year, it was in January, we met for the beginning of the year, and it was just like, okay, well, let's see what's on our scrolls for the year, but let's look on each other's scrolls. That would be fun, wouldn't it? So we did that, and one of the ladies was like, oh, I see this, this, this. I'm like, oh, praise God, praise God, praise God. Because it's like it was change of government, reestablishing things. It was just that the mandate I was totally looking for. But she saw it, and she told me, and I'm like, I took it back and said, right, here's the mandate for God for this year. Change. Everything's going to change. All the barriers are going to be removed. I was like so excited. So we get everyone together, and I said, okay, who wants to resign from their positions? And they're like, their hands go up, these two are the bench of three. It was just like, yes. So it was just like, and then it was like, who feels called? And these like two little hands were like, trying not to be seen. So, and I engaged God. I said, well, who should be on this bench of three? I said, well, you told me these people should be on the bench of three. Yeah, but they didn't cooperate. So they were the right people. They just didn't cooperate with God. So then, okay, well, who should be on the bench of three? Well, there's these two. So I said, okay, well, you better call them then. So they said, look, we feel called, but we don't feel able. I said, well, that'll do for me. And God was very happy with that. So let's work it out. So for 6 months, I think, it was working it through every week. Hey, let's get open and honest. And I started the ball rolling. You know, what are the things you see in me that's caused you offense, or actually you feel that you don't trust me over, or any issues that you've got? Let's get them out. You know, they were like, well, no, we can't say that. So, well, we're not going to work very well as a bench unless we do. So you go first. Say whatever you see. And they began, because I encouraged it, and when they said something, I wasn't defensive. It was just, oh, right, really sorry if that's how I came over. It wasn't my heart, but hey, if that's it, I'll look at that. You know, so we went through this process, and then I started to say, hey, this is about some of the things I see. These are some of the things I think God is wanting to do with us. And we worked it through. We got everything out. We dealt with everything we possibly could deal with. And then they said, no, okay, we feel ready now. We feel ready to accept what God's calling us into. So we stepped into heaven together. He assigned us thrones. He gave them weapons. He gave them things. We all see things from a different perspective, but they all bring the overall picture. I just have to be me. They just have to be them. But it takes relational perseverance if you're going to really function together at that level of government. So if you want to be on a bench, prepare for the process. You know? Yeah.
Tell us how long that took.
Well, the process took about, I think, 4 or 5 months. And then the last month, we really started engaging together and actually learned to discern how each other functioned and how each other person saw. I mean, we're different. We're different redemptive gifts. One of them's a ruler gift. And I'm like, praise God, because I had to learn how to rule. It wasn't my primary function. You know, my primary redemptive gift was prophetic teacher. So I love sort of engaging stuff and seeing things and sharing it. You know, one of the other ladies does sort of carry more of a prophetic edge. So we function well together. And therefore, when we engage, we always bring things from those different perspectives that make up the whole. You know, whereas the other bench, when I first started, they just wanted me to bring the whole lot. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing it. You know, sorry. You know, I'm not going to do it, because what's the point? I might as well do it on my own. Well, I'm not doing it, because that's not the way God set it up. So eventually, we really did do that. Now, we sit and talk, and even in our sitting and talking, it's like heaven is there. We don't always step into heaven, because we're in heaven, and heaven's there when we're talking. And sometimes things just come because we're sharing our hearts. You know, and I found, you know, I share something, and then it's like, so, oh, I had a dream the other day, and it's like, it was this. And it's like, yeah, that's totally in line with what God showed me. And then it's like, oh, yeah, and I was thinking about how this would work doing this. It's just like, hey, this is all working. You know, so there's a flow, there's a relationship. Now, you know, we get to points where sometimes it's like, what do we do about this? Okay, well, we need a heavenly solution. And sometimes we're outside of our ability, so we need to make sure that we are going and we get a strategy from heaven. You know, and as a bench of three, we function with a bench of seven. And they had us pulling our hair out, because they just didn't want, again, they didn't want to rule. They wanted to do with all the people stuff, put out all the fires, but they didn't want to govern. But it's a governmental position. And yes, it's people orientated, but you still have to rule from heaven. So now they're really doing that. You know, we can share with them, hey, we really saw this the other day. Well, go away and see what God's saying about that. See if he wants you to do something about that. We don't tell them what to do, but we share our hearts and they respond and they share their hearts, and now it begins to really function and work better. It's not perfect. We're all still learning. We've all got L plates on. You know, we're not perfect at this, because you default to certain things. You know, so we've got to be careful we're not defaulting to old thinking. So So we continually check our thinking to make sure that we're functioning from a heavenly perspective. Yeah. Well, we have a bench of 12. We have, in our bench of 7, we have the angel of the house, who is the connection point between the 3 and the 7. In the Kahal, which was the Hebrew synagogue setup, you needed 10 good men, that's what they called it, to establish the foundation of government. And then something could form. So you needed a bench of 3 and a bench of 7. Now, I don't want to go into the technicalities, because you can get caught up with, well, you need one of these and one of these and one of these. And really, you just don't. You need those people who got appoints to the roles. They are roles, not people. So the roles can actually have different people in them at different times. And we've had our bench of 7 change a number of times. Different people feel called to something else, and that's okay, because there's a process. But they work together. Our bench of 12 represents all our different governmental spheres. So we have mountains of authority, and we have 12 of them. So we have a bench of 12 that meets with our bench of 7, or has a representative of our bench of 7, and we meet as a 3 with them every 2 weeks. The bench of 7 meets every week, and they just engage heaven, they find out what the heaven's agenda is. Now, we've sort of stirred them to some action, because we were looking at Sunday gatherings, and I was just like, oh, this isn't it, you know. It's just like, I'm bored with this. It's like, not it. Now, 2 weeks before that, I was really happy with it. But God challenged me in my own life, and therefore I'm looking at it and think, oh, it's got to be more than this, you know. So we sort of said to them, look, you know, go and seek God about what he wants to do and what he wants our gatherings to be like. Because years ago, God said, do you want to be a place that hosts the God of the people or the people of God? And it was like, okay, I think we want to be a place that hosts the God of the people. And he said, good answer, because now you can trust me to deal with the people of God. You know? So, but you have to follow that through. And you've got to let him be God. And you've got to stop trying to be God for people. So sometimes you have to let people go through things. You have to jump in and always put out a fire. You've got to be more sensitive to things when you're allowing God to be God in your environment. But that really means that God should be able to do whatever he wants to do whenever you gather. Well, he was fitting into our liturgy. So we changed the order of things, but we didn't really change what we were doing. So now we're really saying, okay, what does God want to do this week? What does God want to do next week? What does God want to do in this season? So let's seek him. And it isn't, well, we're going to do these things. Actually, anything goes. So we may not have any singing. And the last time we met, they decided that they were going to do some engagements around emotions, and they were going to do some stuff. And it was really good. My wife spoke, and several other people spoke, and they did some things, and they had all sorts of things about releasing emotions, and they had some creative ideas, and they did it. And then it came, okay, well, we're going to now engage this, and we want you to engage God, so we're just going to play some music. And people were like, yeah, well, when's the songs coming? You know, it's like, we have no words to follow, some of them. You know, because I was wandering around, sort of observing what was going on, and I was picking up the discontent and the sort of the uncomfortableness of it. Some people were uncomfortable. So I thought, oh, so I let it go for a while. And the musicians themselves were like, you know, I could see that they were picking up that people weren't really activating with it, so they were struggling. So I thought, okay, what do you want to do? So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to say something. So I went up in front and I said, look, there's a whole lot of angels here today, and they're observing. And they're observing because they want to see whether we're going to be responding with heaven and connect with joining with heaven, or whether we're just going to be doing what we normally do. And so I know you're feeling uncomfortable because there's no words. And, you know, some people don't have words on a screen, but they still have words, and people still sing them. And there's nothing wrong in words. You know, I'm not saying there's anything per se wrong with it, if that's what God wants to do. But God didn't want to do it. So I said, look, why don't you just be the sound today? Why don't you just let your frequency out? Let your spirit free. You may want to do an pick up a banner. You may want to dance. You may want to lie on your face. You may want to do anything. You may want to release a sound. The musicians are going to carry on playing, but just look at how you can participate rather than waiting for them to lead you. You actually let your spirit lead. So then people started to, some started singing in tongues, some started making sounds and noise and, releasing stuff. And I was thought, well, I'm just going to go for it. So I just went for it. So then I saw one of these angels who was observing run off. And then he brings back David. And David came with the key of David. So I went to talk to him. And I said, well, okay, what do you want to do? He said, I've got the key of David to unlock the hidden psalmist in everybody. So I'm like, wow. Now, that didn't mean they were all going to be songwriters or song singers, but it was going to release them to be creative in engaging God and not be, well, I don't know if I could do that and I'm feeling uncomfortable because there's no songs to sing and everything else. So basically, I just said, okay, anyone want to engage with David who's here? And anyone be willing that he would unlock you to be able to engage something in a more free way? And they were sort of... But some people, let's go for it. So we did that and people engaged. And now that's just the start. Because it's hard to change people's mindsets and what they're used to. Yeah. And you have to continually emphasize and re-emphasize that over time for them to get used to something different. And then when they're used to that, God won't want them used to that either. Because he doesn't want us to get used to anything. He didn't want to be a formula. It needs to be living and active. But yes, God can tell you beforehand what he wants to do. And sometimes he won't. And he'll want you to come and engage him on the day. Now, ultimately, we want to be part of heaven. So what do they sing in heaven? Well, do we want to sing with that? Or do we want to sing some stuff that they can join in with us? So it's a whole different framework of thinking, which requires a lot more interacting and trusting in hearing the voice of God. Because it's really easy to have a whole bunch of musicians play songs, and everyone would like the songs because some of the songs are good and whatever. I'm starting, and I read some of the words of the songs, and I know I can't sing that. No, I don't even believe that anymore.
That's right.
I'm not singing it. I'll make up my own words to that. And I do, and I sing in tongues or make my own words at half the time because some of the songs we sing are just not where we are at. So we then, well, let's write our own. Okay, well, when we do, we've written our own songs, people have written their own songs and different things. But actually, it's still, well, that is, it isn't a performance, and it shouldn't be led. It shouldn't be led so that you have to follow someone else. It should you being a song, you being a sound, you being a frequency. And then that should harmonize in a particular way. Now, sometimes it's like, well, we don't need to do any of that. Let's do something else. Well, let's do five things in five different rooms today. Because actually, it just doesn't have to be anything. This is the point. If you think it's got to be something, well, we've got to do that, because that's what we do when we get together. Other than relationship, because actually we're relating in some way with God and each other, bottom line is there is no agenda or needs to be where you've got to fit this in. Well, won't God be upset if we're not praising him today? No, he really won't. He's got enough angels up there doing that. He's not really bothered about us. And he's not looking for that. He's looking for our relationship with him. So I said, okay, well, what if today we engage the throne of God and God sends you all on assignments around the world or in time? Wouldn't that be fun? And they're like, how do you do that? Well, let's go and try then. Let's go and ask if he wants us to be available to do something in some adventure around the world. So that would be fun. Yeah, but there's all sorts of things that God could do. Hey, let's do a heavenly court case today. Let's engage this. Hey, let's deal with some of the atmosphere today. Some of it is let's deal with some of the rubbish in our lives today. So we deal with the mind or we're dealing with the emotions. But it's because that's what God wants to do, and we're not going to frame how he does it, we're going to respond. So anyway, that was, don't know where we've gone to that. Benches of 3 and 7, yeah. Okay. Are you aware of Dr. Caroline Leaf, who teaches on the brain, how to clean? Yeah, totally on board with that stuff. We are very much in sort of a sense of agreement with transformation, renewing the mind. We probably would do it maybe differently, but actually that's okay because it's actually lots of different ways of doing things which are all relevant and good. So are you talking about in cleaning out the soul gateways the same thing, but Jesus does the cleaning? In a way, yeah, because one of the soul gateways is the mind. And if the mind is clogged up with a whole load of stuff, memories, which are negative, which are neural pathways linked to negative memories, you've got to get those neural pathways broken and you have to do it. But you know, Jesus can do it with you in cooperation. That's the way, because it's a relational way. I think anything which it errs on the side of relationship is always going to be a safe thing. Rather than a formula or go through a process, actually, what does God want to do today? So when it's a lie bust, okay, I've got lies. What am I believing? There's 15 of them. Which one am I going to choose? Well, no, let God choose. Let him show you what he wants to deal with, because that's going to be much more effective than us deciding what we want to deal with. So it's, again, that's relational. You know, so in that, all these things, renewing the mind, absolutely vital that we're not conformed to the world. But we have our mind renewed to agree with who God says we are. And that will happen with all sorts of different processes within us on our journey. I wouldn't try and be systematic about trying to dig up all the stuff that's a problem. Allow him to do it. If I'm a living sacrifice, the high priest prepares me. So he can cut me open. He can see what's on the inside. He can chop my head off, deal with my legs, my walk. He can do all the things which are symbolic of being a sacrifice. He can lay me on the altar and put the fire on me, because I'm surrendered. He do whatever he likes. You know, search me, O God, know my heart. You know, I cooperate with that. But some days, he doesn't do anything, because he don't need to do anything. And some days, and some seasons, he'll be doing something. So, yeah, all part of the process. Okay. DNA is self-replicating material and a carrier of genetic information. We identify it as two long chains twisted into a double helix joined by the hydrogen bonds. Will our 10 strands of junk DNA be activated when we become true sons of God? The answer is they're not junk. They carry switches and things that can be switched on and off. They carry epigenetic factors which are passed on generationally. So yes, we need to deal with that DNA and have it activated so that we carry actually the full 12 strands, and there are probably more than that when you get into more of God. So having DNA transformed is a really important thing. I use communion to do that, actually taking the DNA of God. I go on the dance floor and engage with the DNA of God. You know, there's a process of focusing in the genetic factors within our DNA, which could be triggers and switches, which will turn on an environment and switch on a disease like diabetes. You know, a lot of people have certain things genetically from their generational lines, which may never get triggered if the environment isn't there to do it. But if you abuse your body and you eat the wrong stuff, you can actually create the environment where those triggers switch. Some of those things are epigenetic factors, not genetic. They're still methylated groups on your genetic material, but they're the memory that is applied from past generations that can actually become a genetic factor for the next generation. So someone can have be an alcoholic and pass that on genetically, epigenetically, so that the next generation have a predisposition to alcohol, even though they may be totally anti-alcohol because they've seen what it's done in their life. Something triggers in their life and environment and they turn to alcohol because it's within their epigenetic factors. We need all that cleansing. We need those groups breaking. We need all that stuff dealing with so that actually, yes, we carry the full sense of what our DNA is supposed to represent, which is actually the character nature of God. So we should have our three genetic strands. So we don't just have two strands. We have two strands and a light strand, which is our spirit. And then the other nine strands are actually three from Father, three from Son, and three from Spirit. And those align with the nine fire stones, and they align with the 12 stones on the high priest. There's the whole stuff. Okay, it's 5 o'clock. Have I got that teaching? Yeah, I've got teaching on within the transformation series, I think, on dealing with genetic factors and epigenetic factors and stuff. In the declarations I use for communion, I specifically address epigenetic factors and apply the power of the life, the body and blood of Jesus, to begin to strip that those negative triggers and actually switch on triggers which are in our genetic material, which are latent abilities which have been lost or hidden. You know, like here, you know, sort of, again, Hollywood puts these stuff out, X-Men, and, you know, there was this TV series called Heroes, in which there were supernatural abilities. Well, actually, we do have those things encoded in our DNA. They're just latently suppressed because they've been lost at various points through our history. You know, at the fall, at the flood, at Babel, different things. Well, those can be switched on. So people are getting supernatural abilities. Like Jesus had, because he carried out all of this, we have those things within us. You know, so, you know, you're not like Superman who comes from another planet, but, you know, but there are other factors like that, you know, which I think will eventually begin to start to function as we get our genetic materials purified but also switched on, you know, because those abilities come from our nature within God himself, because we carry his nature, those three strands from each, Father, Son, and Spirit, that we then have 12 strands, which are fullness of government. Okay, all right.